The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning to you. How are you doing today?
Boker Tov, nice to be with you guys a little bit earlier today. There's always a lot to talk about. And one of the things that caught my attention this week was the report of a ballistic missile that was launched towards Riyadh, apparently coming from somewhere in Yemen, as I understand it. Now, for people who don't know what a ballistic missile is, it's a missile that actually goes outside of the Earth's atmosphere towards its target, wherever it's going. And this is one that was launched towards Riyadh. Apparently, it was intercepted, and so a disaster was prevented. But that's a fairly kind of serious event. I mean, this is something that's hardly even made news headlines anywhere, but it's just a crazy situation.
Why would this not make news headlines? I mean, this is pretty much a pretty serious international incident using fairly sophisticated weaponry.
Yeah, I mean, this is a very serious incident. And I don't know, it's just considered, I think, just to be part of the local altercation that's going on in Yemen with Saudi-led forces and Iranian aligned Houthis. I mean, this is clearly an attack from Iran with the use of the ballistic missile. We can take it as a fairly sure situation. We can take it as given that the Houthis in Yemen probably don't have ballistic missiles at their disposal. This clearly comes with the support of Iran against Saudi Arabia. And hence, by the way, just bringing it round full circle, hence why we understand that Iran and Israel are becoming much more closely aligned in the whole anti-Iran alignment and the whole anti-Iran coalition because of incidents, I'm guessing, like this, and also many, many others that that don't come to anybody's attention at all. I think that the Saudis very much consider Iran to be a threat in the region, not only in Yemen, but potentially, as we now understand, against Saudi in Saudi Arabia when ballistic missiles are being launched towards Riyadh. That's not a situation that should be taken lightly.
Not at all. The other story that I saw in the region is that the UAE is moving to a 4.5-day week to boost productivity and improve work-life balance. What is the situation in Israel in terms of a work week? Because this has always been something that Israel has also struggled with in some way, especially considering how internationally Israel operates in a lot of the tech space.
Yeah, so Israel does struggle a little bit with the work week. I mean, the standard work week in Israel is Sunday to Thursday. That is the day that, for example, the stock exchange operates, that the banks operate, most white-collar workers would be expected to work a Sunday to Thursday week. Having said that, a lot of companies face outside of Israel at all as well, and they therefore also have a Friday shift of some sort in order to recognize the fact that they need to be available on a Friday for their customers, for their suppliers, for the people that they work with abroad. They need to be available on a Friday. So there are quite a number of companies that operate a special Friday shift in order to take that into consideration. And it even goes further than that. There are certain companies that operate a shift on U.S. time zone. So it really is a shift that goes into the night in Israeli terms. The one thing that Israel's really struggled with is the issue of schools. The schools in Israel operate, as a general rule, 6 days a week. And so they operate on a Sunday to Thursday plus half day on Friday week. Some schools have decided to drop the half day on a Friday and operate only Sunday to Thursday, but in the most part, schools do attend on a Friday as well. It's a little bit of a battle. There has been some talk about trying to drop to a 4-day week at times, some quite serious discussions, but that seems to have been parked to one side. It is a constant battle that Israel experiences. And of course, we also have the added issue of Christians who would like to take off on Sunday rather than on Saturday, and Muslims who would like to take off on Friday rather than Saturday or Sunday. So the rule says that everybody should have at least one day a week where they have off. You choose which day it is according to what your common practice is, but at least one day a week should be taken off. I'm not sure that everybody even abides by that.
Yeah, it is. It's interesting because you are seeing the shift around the world. I guess as countries are globalized in terms of their practice. Let's take a look at some of the real stories that also that we wanted to discuss. The 8th Israel Greece Cyprus summit took place in Jerusalem yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I quite like this story because it's kind of good news story. Israel, Cyprus, and Greece have a very, very good relationship in the region, and they have many common interests. Prime Minister Naftali Bennett looked quite proud to be hosting the 8th summit of these two countries, these three countries, meeting together. They had lunch at a hotel in Jerusalem as part of the summit, and each of the Greek and Cypriot prime ministers had the opportunity also to meet with President Isaac Herzog during the time that they visited in Jerusalem. There are so many areas of common interest that Israel, Cyprus, and Greece have to talk about. It's about economics, it's about agriculture, it's about security in the region, and of course, they have to talk about gas and the whole oil and gas industry, the burgeoning oil and gas industry that we see in East Mediterranean. There is this thing called the East Med Gas Forum, which also includes, interestingly, Egypt, as well as the Palestinian Authority as a member of that particular forum, where they talk about issues relating to gas, not only the work that's going on with the various oil platforms and gas platforms in the region, which are actually extracting the gas from the reserves under the sea, but also the discussion about the gas pipeline that has been suggested and is still currently under discussion for a potential gas pipeline that will take gas from the Eastern Mediterranean area to mainland Europe. Interestingly, one of the topics that was on the agenda, at least as far as the Greek and Cypriot prime ministers were concerned, is the whole area of Turkey. They, those two prime ministers in their statements each took the opportunity to talk about Turkey's continued intransigence, about Turkey's unacceptable aggression. Of course, Turkey still has possession of the northern part of Cyprus, of the island of Cyprus, and that's really a thorn in the side of the Cypriot government, and is also considered to be very much a thorn in the side of the Greek government as well. So each of them had the opportunity to have their say about Turkey. Interestingly, Prime Minister Naftali Bennett didn't say anything about Turkey. And just in that particular context, there were reports earlier this week and last week about the fact that Turkey might want to try to somehow get a little bit more close to Israel following years in which the diplomatic relations have been somewhat strained. There was even a report that I read that there had been some sort of an attempt to assassinate Turkish President Erdogan. Some bomb had been planted under the car of one of the police escorts to the president of Turkey. At the moment, Turkey is really not on the agenda. I sense that even from an Israeli government perspective, even though they may well like to try to pursue a closer relationship with Turkey, it's kind of not happening at the moment. And Turkey seems to be turning a lot more towards Iran, towards Russia, towards that area. Turkey has a very, very fascinating role in international diplomacy. Constantinople as a city was always the crossroads between East and West. Yeah, Istanbul today – which is the modern city of Constantinople, has no different relationship. Sometimes it's facing east, sometimes it's facing west. Its relationship with the United States comes and goes a little bit. It did want to become part of the European Union, and it still has a lot of pain about the fact that it was unable to achieve that. So certainly Greece and Turkey are looking for some friends as far as the issue with Turkey is concerned. But really a very nice summit yesterday between Israel, Greece and Cyprus, and continued good relations between those three countries.
That really is a very nice, a very positive story. The Russian foreign minister will also be visiting Israel next week.
Yes, so Sergei Lavrov announced yesterday that he will make a visit to Israel on Sunday. And it's interesting that this announcement comes exactly on the back of an allegation that Israel carried out an attack yesterday morning, in the early hours of yesterday morning, against a target in Syria, particularly at Latakia port, which is considered to be near where the Russians have a very significant presence, and there is a Russian airbase around that area. And so one wonders to what extent Sergei Lavrov's visit on Sunday surrounds or comes as a result of that particular bombing that took place yesterday. In the meeting with the Greek and Cypriot prime ministers, our prime minister, Naftali Bennett, did kind of allude to the attack that took place in Latakia in the early hours of yesterday morning, saying that Israel has to fight against negative forces. And it seems as if, though, he was trying to refer to that particular attack that was carried out. But now we have an upcoming visit of the Russian foreign minister. The Russian foreign minister hasn't been to Israel for some time. He did accompany Vladimir Putin to the World Holocaust Forum meeting, which took place in January of 2020. But in fact, the last time that Sergei Lavrov was in Israel for some sort of a working visit was only in 2018. So quite a long time has passed since Sergei Lavrov was last in Israel. We know that Israel and Russia have a relatively close relationship, lots of communication going backwards and forwards. It's a kind of an interesting relationship because it's not always only good things. We know that Russia are there in Syria. We know that they potentially are helping the Syrians to create a conflict situation which they could use against Israel. We know that the Russians are cooperating with Iran. So we've got a lot of issues about Russia, and particularly with Russia's attitude towards Iran, and in particular to the nuclear agreement with Iran. So it's going to be interesting to watch out for that meeting on Sunday to find out what goes down with Sergei Lavrov in particular. It would be interesting to be a fly on the wall to see what happens, which isn't discussed in the news conferences that will follow that particular meeting.
Yeah, and especially at the moment when you've got this incredible tension between the United States and Russia, and that doesn't seem to be going in a very, very positive direction. I wonder if Israel can play a role here.
It is interesting to see what's happening between the U.S. and Russia, and I noted that President Joe Biden made sure to contact the Ukrainian President Zelensky before he contacted Putin, because of course Ukraine is feeling very vulnerable at the moment with reports about the fact that Russia might be gearing up towards an attack on Ukraine, and Ukraine looking really towards the West for support against Russia. And so there are lots of interesting little developments in the region. It seems as though Russia is quite offensive at the moment and could potentially take action against Ukraine in the near future. They've already captured that piece, the peninsula in the Black Sea, and who knows what else Russia might choose to do. We will be watching that, of course, very carefully.
Yeah. I can't imagine that Ukraine gets a lot of comfort from the fact that the U.S. can't even unmute themselves on one of these conferences. Joe Biden keeping himself on mute by mistake. That can't come as any real comfort for the Ukrainians looking to the United States for support. Either way, moving on to another conversation, Israel has finished building the Gaza security barrier. What is this barrier? I thought there was already a barrier.
There is a barrier, and there was a barrier, but this barrier has been under constant construction up until now. This is a barrier that's been a work in progress and is finally being completed. The work of constructing this barrier, which is 30-foot high concrete wall, that's the bit that's above the ground. There's a whole lot that goes below the ground as well in order to try to stop the construction of tunnels, digging underneath the Gaza border, as we've seen has been the case up until now on a number of occasions. Quite a number of these tunnels have come into Israel, but the wall itself stands 30 foot high, and it runs 65 kilometers all along the Gaza border. This wall has cost $1.1 billion to construct. Now, we know about walls in the past, right? We all recall the issue of the Berlin Wall. We know that there's a wall that divides Nicosia on the island of Cyprus between the Turkish and the Greek Cypriot area. We know about the wall along the border with Mexico that the United States government has or has not constructed. And walls in general don't conjure up positive images at all. This particular wall is super high tech. And while it doesn't conjure up any positive images, unfortunately, it is just a matter of necessity for Israel in order to be able to protect itself in the most efficient sort of way without risking the lives of our soldiers who are forced to patrol that area and to prevent terror attacks from coming from the Gaza side. The wall has multiple sensors to detect tunnels. It has apparently a 20-foot or a 6-meter steel fence. It has a network of radar arrays and other surveillance sensors. It has remote-controlled weaponry. This is a wall and a fence to go along with it, which is very, very sophisticated indeed, and has armies of people watching cameras and monitoring the sensors in order to ensure that nothing is missed. It's all fine and well to have cameras and to have sensors, but you need to actually have somebody watching them in order to make sure that the moment one of those is activated, that some action can be taken to ensure that there is no infiltration of the borders. So while this is a very unfortunate reality that Israel is having to face of having to construct this barrier along the 65-kilometer border with Gaza, the fact is that this barrier will save the lives of our soldiers in a very, very measurable way. It's not insignificant at all. And unfortunately, we've had to pay all this money to construct the wall, which has taken 3.5 years. But apparently now the wall is done. It goes up high enough to prevent people from climbing over. It goes down deep enough to prevent tunnels from being dug underneath. And it's got everything along the side in order to make sure that Israel and those people, particularly who live around the Gaza Strip area, will be as secure as possible.
The sad thing about it is that you can see where the story is going to go. We're going to see photos of the wall. We're going to see, and that's going to be the story. The wall Sure. is going to be the story, not the reason for the wall, not the fact that these communities have been living with absolute trauma and fear for year upon year upon year.
And unfortunately, what the wall doesn't do is it doesn't stop the missiles from being fired over the wall, which of course we've seen in recent conflicts. And, you know, we've had to become a lot smarter using defense weaponry such as the Iron Dome and other anti-missile systems in order to protect people living around that area, and indeed people living all over Tel Aviv. But these days, those very, very cheap missiles that the Gazan factions are able to operate can reach Tel Aviv and even potentially further north than that. So, the war is unfortunately too much of the story, but it's really only part of the story. And Absolutely. It's there to protect people. And I think we would all prefer it if we could take this wall down.
Absolutely. Anthony Reich, it is 8:00. We'll catch you tomorrow morning at 7:45. I'm Howard Feldman. This is your Morning Mayhem.